you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. But it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all you stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the known world listening to this live or on podcast. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother. This is Dr. Keelan Hinton with my esteemed co-host, Dr. Nate Chapman, and we are here for all of your mental health, community, attachment needs, and everything else in between. Thank you for joining us. For those that would like to participate in the show, You can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com for any questions, comments, suggestions, ideas. That's B, the number 2B, P-S-Y-C-H, at Gmail, b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, any of the perspectives, ideas, thoughts, or concerns that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, any of its employees, affiliates, or sponsors or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we say, take this advice at your own risk. And as Dr. Chapman always tells us, while this may be therapeutic to some degree, this is not what, sir?
This is not therapy. As you know, you have not come to the office. You're definitely not on the couch. And I don't feel my pockets filling with any money. So you're not in therapy, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. So it has been an eventful, my apologies for that feedback. It has been an eventful last couple of weeks. You know, we've been busy. We've had a snowstorm here.
Yeah, somebody made Elsa mad.
Yeah.
Somebody.
So it has been an interesting and eventful last couple of weeks. So our deepest apologies for not having a show for those that listen regularly. And but we're back and we're ready to rock and roll, and we got a lot of catching up to do. So with that being said, let's rock and roll. How are you, my brother? How is sunny California doing? How's it treating you?
It's good. You know, I mean, I did hear that you guys had a warm day to day, but it's probably been better than you guys. I know you had the power outage and trees everywhere. It sounded ridiculous.
It was, it was horrible. I mean, it was pretty bad. Things that I learned from it, things that I think people should have learned from it. I don't know if they did, but how prepared am I if something happens? You know, I've been asking people forever, if the water went bad, how long could you survive with the water in your house? It's something I've been asking people for years. And when things like this happen, I wonder if it makes people take stock and really stand back and think, like, if something were to happen, you know, could I keep my family warm? If the water went bad, how much water do we have to survive? You know, do I have tools and things around me that could help me? So for years, my family has said that I'm a crazy man, and my children have said that I'm crazy because I'm not a prepper, but I would like to think I'm ready for anything. I have a small stock of food. I always keep, you know, in case something happens, you know, cases of water are $1.99 at Aldi or somewhere. So I just get 20 bucks, you know, every now and again, and just throw 10 cases in the corner, you know. And lo and behold, I'm the genius of the family now. Something goes bad, I had a kerosene heater. Like, I'm, you know, not that I'm not a doomsday prepper, but if something happens, you know, I want to be prepared. And this time, it was still hard, but I was prepared. I was probably better prepared than most. So I wonder if people will, you know, take stock of what happened and, you know, maybe, you know, collect some things here and there just in case something does happen. I don't know. We always think that it won't happen to us.
Yeah, does that mean with your stock of food? I can just picture it now, like you got this a shed in the back with all these things in it. Does that mean every once in a while you gotta have a week where you're eating food that's about to expire?
No. No, I don't like, you know, I'm not that heavy. I mean, I got some stuff, you know. I'm no one to play with, okay, my friend. But I don't have a list of what dates, and I'm rotating stuff to the front, and we got to eat this because it's gonna expire, and you know, I mean, if some calamity happens, I mean, I don't care if this can of greens expired last year, I'm gonna eat it. You know what I mean? And do it what we know about expiration dates. A lot of food doesn't necessarily spoil like that. It's just best at that date. You know what I mean? Just like aspirin and ibuprofen and stuff like that. Like, they don't sort of go bad. Well, let me be quiet. Again, anyone out there, I am not a doctor. Do not eat any expired food or... But for me, you know, if something bad happens, I don't care if this can of food expired last year. I don't care. I'm going to eat. You know, but I try to be as prepared as I can in case something happens. And obviously you can't prepare for everything. But again, do not follow my advice. I am not a doctor. Do not eat anything expired in any way, shape, form, or fashion, please. But yeah, I try to, you know, as best I can. But it's something else that we'll probably talk about this weekend as well. The manifest was... It was interesting how everybody, and then we'll get to it, but I just want to say this real quick. I felt like I couldn't relax during, not necessarily relax. It's different when you are caring for other people. Like, yeah. Everybody else can freak out but you. I didn't feel like, you know, when disasters happen, you know, it's dad, fix it. So it's like, okay, how are we going to stay warm? How are we going to eat? How are we going to... Everybody else can freak out and be nervous and be scared and be afraid, yeah. But it's just like somebody got to keep it together. You know what I mean? And after a few days, I noticed that I was tired. And I was tired from thinking about what to do when the next moment happens.
Yeah, it can be exhausting.
Yeah, so that was interesting. It was just this notion of idea of... And then it brought about this question, which again, we may get into in the panel a little bit later. This weekend, like, the role of dad, does everybody want that smoke? And it's this notion or idea of you feel like you never get a chance to rest.
Yeah. You could. This probably be a good place for you to mention the panel since the listeners might not know what panel
you're talking about. Oh, yeah. Dr. Chapman and myself, we are part of a core group of men that, and it is set up by Mr. Ronald Jones. He is CEO of Ronald Photography, as well as the CEO of I Dare to Lead, mentoring and consulting firm. He's the CEO of that. And he also, we put together these panels and discussions called Manifest. And if you are on my page, Keelan Henson, or Dr. Chapman's page, or Dr. Chapman Consulting, on his consulting page, you'll probably find it there. You'll find links there. And this Friday, I believe at 7 o'clock, typically we have a mixed panel. This panel will be just men, and we usually talk about issues of identity, issues of attachment, relationship issues. So we will have another open organic discussion this Friday at 7 o'clock. So those who are connected either to my page or Dr. Chapman's page or his consulting page, you can find us there. That's what we'll be doing this weekend as well. And so a lot of the things that we talk about on here, we go into more depth in those panels, and we have different discussions and different perspectives and different personalities that we get different angles from. So it's just something, just a thought, a conversation amongst the community. So if you are free this Friday at 7 o'clock, it's called Manifest, and you will find it on my page as well as Dr. Chapman's page, okay?
7 o'clock East Coast.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, 7 o'clock East Coast. So it'll be 4 o'clock your time, right? Something like that. All right. So moving on and moving forward, our last show a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the program was about here and now. We discussed identity, evolution, and most important changes. It was my turn, so I went last week, and I talked about how I've evolved and changed. And talked about different stages from childhood to my 20s to my 30s to now to my 40s. What were some of what I like to call pivot points or key experiences I had that made me reflect and made me change? And what were some of the identity and emotional issues, identity and emotional changes that I went through from childhood to my 20s to my 30s to my 40s? And this week, we will get a little bit more insight into Dr. Chapman. And today he will do his Here and Now challenge, and he will talk about the evolution of him. And from his perspective, what were some of the things that played an important part in him evolving as a person, as a spirit, as a man, from childhood to his 20s, to his 30s, to his 40s? So with that being said, Dr. Chapman, let's rock and roll. What's one of the, I guess let's start from childhood to now. Biggest differences, the biggest change, biggest difference in perspective. You know, as a 10-year-old, what was your perspective on the world? What was your perspective on your place in the world? Were you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and anything is possible? Or can you remember, when you think back, can you think about what was your perspective?
Yeah, before I answer that out for the listeners, I just want to, so this challenge, then and now, we sparked the idea based on what's going on with Facebook, the pictures of then and now. You know, you have pictures of somebody younger, pictures of somebody older, just so you guys are in on that. I don't know. My perspective of the world as a 10-year-old, it's hard for me to pinpoint. And I think about my life, I guess, in tears. I started to think about this, but then I was like, I'm not gonna think about it too hard because I wanted to be authentic. I don't want to just come in here, and, you know, like I wrote something for you, although it probably would have been moving. But I figured I'd just, you know, think about it like this. So if I think about the first before 10, so like 0 to 10, my perspective, I can't think exactly pinpoint what it was like, but just for the listeners, from 0 to 10, a lot of things went on in my life. You know, like when I was 8 months, I was taken away from my birth mom and put into a foster care system. And I was in the foster care system from 8 months to 5. I don't really have a strong recollection. I remember it, but I don't have like lots of memories in that point. Like my first memory is when I was adopted, and that memory for me was very vivid and like traumatic, even though, you know, where I ended up being with the Chapmans was a blessing and a good place. That memory, when it happened, it felt like being torn away from where I was at, what I was used to. You know, I remember where they pulled me, trying to put me in the car, and I was kicking and screaming, trying not to be put in the car. And then they tried to basically negotiate with me about how things were going to be good, took me to McDonald's, and I was like Sundays then, bribing me with Mr. T cereal. You know, I was a weaker vessel then. So that kind of works. But I think that, and then go a little further, when I was five, right around after I was adopted, kindergarten wasn't a good experience for me the first year. I don't really remember it well, but I remember some of the things. And from hindsight, I remember my dad telling me, you know, he had a conversation with the kindergarten teacher that was very embarrassing for him, because went in and she told him, like, oh, Mr. Chapman, your kid is failing kindergarten. He thought that was ridiculous. How can I remember? I'm just newly adopted. So he would figure that I would know whatever I'm supposed to know. And then it was like, he thought this must be a color thing, because my adoptive parents was white. I mean, my adoptive parents are black, but my foster parents were white. And they were like, they got kids of their own. How come this kid doesn't know his shapes, doesn't know his colors? I bet they kids know their shapes and colors. And, you know, they got this kid looking like an idiot, like he don't know anything. To the point when I didn't pass, they just told him basically the reason I didn't pass is because I was mentally retarded. That's the definition for intellectual disabilities at that time. But he refused to take that diagnosis and was like, nah, that's not what's going on. And so I spent my summer when other kids were playing and doing all that stuff, just working on shapes and colors and like a regiment. But imagine a five-year-old sitting there. It's like torture to a five-year-old sitting there, A, B, C, D, all your colors, all the stuff you're supposed to know. It was not a fun time. But I think the lesson there was, the first part was, you know, things can change. Like, you get comfortable and things will happen in terms of the adoption, whether it was good or bad. Things will change. You got to be able to adapt. Might not be something you want. Something can happen quickly in life. I think that was probably the resonating message. And then after that experience, it was, nobody's gonna give you anything. Like if you want, as a five-year-old, like if you want things to happen, then, okay, so they told you you're mentally retarded? Nope, we reject that. This is what we need to do. We need to get you studying this stuff and learning this stuff, and you ain't gonna like it. This is what you're gonna have to do, because the world says you're this, we disagree with that. If you disagree with it, even though I was five, I couldn't disagree my own way. Then this is what you gotta do. So it was like more like, okay, you gotta be responsible for what you're putting out there. It's gonna require hard work. It's not gonna necessarily be easy. Then when I was six, my mother, my newly adopted mother, now died of breast cancer. She died in the house. You know, it was a hospice situation. So when she died, I was there. I saw that whole process go down. And it was another reminder that things can change like quickly. You know, you have somebody and they're here 1 minute, they're gone the next. It's just kind of how life goes. So I think those are the biggest imprints before 10. So I think the lesson is probably one, things can be one way 1 minute, change the next. You better be able to bounce back. Two, the world can kind of tell you you're one thing. You need to figure out if you agree with that. If you don't agree with that, then you need to do something about it. All of this obviously processed at a younger level, and I'm looking at that from adult eyes now, but I think that would be the lesson that I've absorbed from that age. From a 10-year-old, I think
it's amazing. Changed. It's amazing to me that those memories are so vivid at such a young age when you can barely do anything.
Yeah.
At 5 years old, right. I just think that the human mind is amazing. There's so many things that you probably went through at that age, but there are certain things, not just with you, but with all of us, and that's what. We had that conversation before about trauma. People always think about trauma as something that has to be catastrophic. And those were pretty emotionally intense moments. But right. But trauma can be just any event that is emotional, that has some sort of emotional significance in your life. And I wonder if a lot of people out there have things that happen to them, but they say, I wasn't beat or robbed or sexually abused, so it's not trauma. But there are things that happen to us, like you're talking about, that are emotionally significant that just stick with us. Like, right. You remember going to McDonald's. You remember the ice cream. Like, you remember so many of those things that I don't know. Some people probably wouldn't label as, like, how do you remember? Like, you remember so many other little things that are attached to that. That I think that's interesting. It's interesting that you took all of that away. That. Nobody can, well, don't let people label you.
Yeah, for that particular day, remembering those details is easy because the ice cream was just like one of the parts. Like, the other part is me putting my feet on the door, trying to like fight to like, no, I'm not going, but I just wasn't strong enough, you know, those type of things. And then I guess I would say for the listeners is like, yeah, it was traumatic, no way around it. But I think events that happen define you, but you still can have some say about how they define you. But I didn't have that choice, you know what I'm saying? No, that's just something that happened. But they say, or what I've read about it, is some of it's about how you process the memory. So whatever the memory was and how it happened, you can't necessarily change how it happened, but you can determine like what you're gonna do with the story after. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's, I guess that's kind of how it is for me.
Okay, okay. So we move from your early years. How were your teenage years?
Okay, so the next patch, I guess, would be 11 to 20. So in that time frame, that's when I discovered Jesus, right? Like I was leaning heavily on Jesus just because some of the things that I was experiencing, and that's like other people go to whatever else they go to, that's where I would go to in my own way. My parents were religious, but it wasn't my parents' religion. Like I had discovered my own venting source that worked for me. You know, my grandma gave me this little green Bible, and that's what I would take and read. And well, first it was a children's Bible. I was 11, so like I had to learn with the children's Bible first, but then it was this other Bible. And considering I had difficulty with a number of other things, being able to read the Bible was kind of a surprise that I could do that. But what it did for me is give me some source, you know, like I knew that I had something. It was like a being, something that would listen to me when I was stressed and going through things. That was helpful. The other thing I think that defined me between 11 and 20, one is the relationship I have with my grandparents, my grandpa and grandma Chapman, that were just like a strong additional support system. So I'm coming from a family of eight. And when you got all those kids, it is what it is, a lot of kids. But grandparents have a way of like picking a certain kid, like, oh, okay, we're gonna, you know, show this kid certain love. And that really made a difference for me in my life. So the memories there of, oh, you're valued, the stronger ones I felt like that really stand out for me during that period was with my grandparents. The other thing was I would call myself a hooper, like I was a hooper then. That was a big thing for me, right? Like that was one of my big dreams, something I really wanted to do. And it defined a lot of the things that I do. I think the lessons that I was carrying away, I guess I would narrow it from maybe 10 to 18, like before I left the house, during that point was, I mean, I don't know if I can narrow it down to lessons, but trying to craft out who you are, but also at that time in my life, like I told you, I got a lot of siblings. I felt like I had lots of responsibilities, you know, like helping with the other kids. And I was always kind of treated like the oldest. So
where were you in the line of children, like age wise?
So I got,
were you in the middle? Were you the oldest? Were you the youngest?
I have two older siblings, but I'm the oldest able body and the oldest boy. So I was always kind of treated like the oldest.
Okay.
Or felt like that anyways. So I always felt like I was carrying a lot of responsibility, and like, though it may not have been true, like I was getting more responsibility than I should have. Like, you know, I shared a room with my little brother who's 10 years younger than me. And this little joker, you know what I'm saying? He'll do what little ones do, right? Like I'm 10, so that means he's like two. He's got little toys out, he's messing the room up. And like, who gets blamed for that? Me. You know, like, so like, yeah. Anyways, these are just some of those things that it's like the responsibility felt heavy at times. I think that that's played out into my adult life and an advantage, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, many people grow up and have parents that don't really put responsibility on them and take it away from them. And I think that cripples to some extent. That doesn't mean I wouldn't have liked to have less responsibility, but I think it's helped me in the long run as I've grown on. But then I say when I got 18, this cluster is 11 to 20, but when I got to 18, I had to make a decision about what I was gonna do with the rest of my life. You know, my parents had a conversation with me when I was basically like a junior, and it was like, oh, you know, what are you gonna do after this? Because you're not gonna be living here. And that didn't mean that disrespectful. In my day and age, when you're 18, that's what you do. It's eight kids in the house, whatever.
That's the exact thing that happened to me.
Anyways, y'all, You didn't have to convince me to leave. I wanted to do my own thing. But I really didn't have an idea. You know, the other thing that happened during that period of time is my parents had the foresight to think, we want to get our kids out of certain environments. Like, okay, so the first, when I was, I don't know, probably from elementary school to ninth grade, we lived in like a working class neighborhood. It's pretty diverse, but it's working class, you know. It wasn't poverty, but it was like this one step above, like working class kind of neighborhood. And then my parents had got promotions and different things. And then in my ninth grade year, I went to move with my grandma. She lived in the inner city. So I went from like this kind of really diverse school to all black school, which, you know, that was the transition was interesting for a lot of reasons, but also because it happened right before basketball season. And I was thinking the school I was at, I was in ninth grade, I was going to be on the team. I was going to be on varsity, all this stuff I was thinking about. So imagine if you're a hooper, like that's like, this is what you're going to do. Then you got to switch to another school. And how it goes is those things are usually established. People kind of know who's been coming up. I've been in that school for a while. So then I switch and I go to live with my grandma, and not just getting used to being a new school, a new culture, a whole bunch of different things, and then trying to get on the basketball team, which it worked out because my dad had played there. More so, I think it was because kind of doing a favor based on his legacy, because when I got there, the season had already started. They still let me on. But so there was that switch, and then that was in ninth grade. I was with my grandparents while the house was being built in this new neighborhood, which was primarily white, but like, so a whole new socioeconomic status. So now like almost lower upper class, you know, type of neighborhood where kids are talking about going to college. Like that's a thing. Like to me, the high school felt like a college. You know, we're talking about 5,000 kids or something like that, something ridiculous compared to where I was at before. You have like three or four different separate, it was like a Canton school, Salem school, which are schools that represent two different cities, but like a multiplex kind of campus. You go to, it was just like, to me, like awesome experience that my parents had the foresight to kind of think like, okay, we think this school opportunity will change opportunities for you, but still a big difference because now these kids are talking totally different. Long story short on that, my parents never had no conversation with me about college. They're too busy doing whatever they do, trying to raise kids. And so it was basically what you're going to do next. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the Army. But when I made that decision, I wasn't really making that decision like other kids. Like I talk to kids now, come to see me and they want to know, how did you figure out what you want to do? Like, how do you become a doctor? And they think it's like traditional. I'm like, no, I just got on the plane and basically figured it out while I was in the plane. Or I walked into a room, and then when I got in that room, I saw other doors. That's kind of how it went for me. So going that route, I would say from that point, early age to 20, it's lost. And then as I got closer to where I'm at now, it's found in terms of like.
Okay, so hold on. So let's use that as a pivot point. But before we do that, station identification. Again, you are listening to, this is Marshall University, WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. Again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Keelan Henson and Dr. Nate Chapman. And we're talking about the evolution and change. We're talking about change, okay? What's the name of the challenge again? The change challenge? Why am I blanking on
then and now?
Yeah, we were talking about the then and now challenge. I'm giving a little insight into both of us as hosts and as people. And Dr. Chapman is letting us know a little bit about his evolution from childhood to his 20s and 30s until now. So what were the things, we're moving from your 20s to 30s, the question is, what were a few core things that you took at 18 or 20, moving into your young adulthood, what did you take into your young adulthood from all of that that happened? If you could say three or four principles or three or four things or three or four ideas, what did you take into your young adulthood?
I think from 10 to 18, I took responsibility.
What was your responsibility? Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, what was your perspective moving into young adulthood? Responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I took this understanding of what it meant. I mean, I had to grow into it more, but like a basic understanding of being responsible and how important that was. I took a work ethic, you know, that have been created over many years, and not just created, because it wasn't like it was just created from my parents. Like, I've always had a desire to like make my own mark some way, but I think that was further grown during those years, because I also had multiple jobs when I was younger and different things that I was doing during those ages. But responsibility, work ethic, and I guess the other thing was really still a lot to learn. That's not a characteristic. It's just that I had some holes, you know. Okay. I think one of those was, like, told you, I started really developing my faith at that early age. But when I got towards my early 20s, I became more rigid in my faith. So it took me some time to really get some, learn some flexibility and realize the difference.
So from your 20s to your 30s, what changed the most? Was it part of that idea of being flexible in your thinking? Was that a part of it? But also, what changed? What was the biggest change or biggest evolution that you went through from your 20s to your 30s?
So my 20s and 30s, I did develop some more flexibility in that area, but I don't think that's my biggest evolution. It's kind of marked by what happened in my 20s and 30s. So from my 20s to the 30s, I got out of the military after like almost 7 years, and I had a big transition point in life. You know, like...
Let me ask a question real quick. So was your plan... When you got into the military, did you have a plan when you got into the military? Was it, I'm going to retire or I'm just here?
I went from lost to found. No, I didn't have a plan. I said, like, oh, I'm going to go. You know, it started out originally like, okay, this is something I'm going to tell people when they ask me because I don't have an answer. And then I would get certain responses like, don't do it, you know, from the lady folk. But it's never something really, I didn't really thought out that much. And then when I did think it out, I was like, well, let me just do something that's responsible. That was all it was to it. Do something that's responsible. I told the recruiter, look, I want to work with computers. He gave me a job that wasn't even what I was talking about. But yeah, so no, I didn't have a plan. I was just like, I'm going to do something responsible. That was it.
Okay.
Yeah, but once I got in, you know, and started doing a couple different tours, and I had to start to think about it. Like, okay, is this something that I want to do? I started becoming, so I had developed this idea of being responsible in general, like taking care of duties, bills, all those things. But I guess in my 20s and 30s, I started developing the idea of being responsible for what it is I want to do and who I want to become. Okay. So like, you can be responsible, take care of your bills. Many people do that. You get a job just to take care of your bills. But are you going to be responsible for how you put your gifts out in the world? Do you even know what your gifts are? Like, all those things are questions that I started to think about more when it was time for me to get out of the military. Because I had seen lots of cats get out. If you're ever getting out, like, oh, what are you going to do when you get out? I'm going to work at the post office. I'm going to do no disrespect to any of those jobs, but that just wasn't for me. That wasn't what I wanted to do. And I said, oh, that's a problem. What do I want to do? Like, if I'm going to get out of here and go somewhere next. So it really forced me to start thinking about, like, what it is I want to do? What's going to work for me? And it's not even that I had a perfect answer at it then yet, but the first answer I came up with was I was going to teach high school. And that answer resonated with me because I felt like I missed that opportunity when I got out of high school because I just waited too late. And just took something that would be responsible and respectable. I didn't take something that, like, oh, that's like really what I feel passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so this was an opportunity to do that. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna teach, you know. And I shaped when I went to college while I was in the military, I shaped my degree based on teaching. I'll teach high school. And I hadn't picked out like specifically what I should teach. The whole idea was just to teach. So I was not as specific on that, but I felt like teaching is a way for me to give back to the younger generation. I always had a desire to mentor in some way. And I was just becoming more focused on getting out and getting out with a purpose instead of being like some of these other cats I saw. I felt like just got out and then did whatever, did nothing, or like, and that's not a judgment to them. I just felt like that can't be me. I'm not gonna just get out and be like doing nothing.
So what do you think is motivating? What is at the foundation of this change? Is it just getting older or is it experience? What do you think plays an important part in people changing? Is it experience? Is it getting older? Is it both?
I think it varies. Well, I think experience, the answer is usually it varies because, you know, that's everybody's idiosyncratic. But I think that experience plays a role. I mean, because how many people have we met that are like at whatever age, 40, 50, 60, and they're like, they got a long way to go. Their growing has not really happened, haven't really evolved.
Yeah.
That's because they haven't experienced anything, you know? Or you see a cat who's like 20, seems like he's lived a long life. He's experienced so many things, that he's growing in or she's growing and evolving. And I think for me, it was what I saw, man. Like, and I think the other thing was, you know, these people I'm talking about that got up before me, I cared about them in some way. And I was just shocked. I was very shocked at like what they chose to do. I felt like it was under them, beneath them. Like they didn't really think about it. They didn't put much thought into it. And I just could relate to them because they were like, kind of like fam to me. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Like I wasn't the type to say, why are you doing that? Because I don't, if you say you're gonna go somewhere and that's where you wanna go, I'm not gonna discourage you. But I still felt like, nah, man, you could be doing so many other things. Like why just settle for, you know, manager at Walmart or whatever it was, you know?
No knock on managers at Walmart.
No, this is no knock on any of those things. I'm just saying, like, I felt like, man, and it's how I feel about people in general. I feel like people have all this untapped potential, and then what they do is they box it up, they put it in the box, they don't take it out because so-and-so told them they need to do this other thing or because society says they need to do this other thing. And then they basically just walk around with this untapped potential that they're losing because they don't have it. They feel depressed and anxious about it, and the world is losing because they don't have it.
Is it that they don't know that they have it, or they're afraid to try? Which do you think it is? On average, when you meet people and you speak to people in your office, whether it be in your practice or your students, are they afraid to try, or they just don't know what they're capable of?
I think it's both. I think it's different variations with different people. Sometimes people sincerely don't know. Like they don't know because they've been following around the shadows of other people. They've been saying like, it's like the whole don't ask a fish to climb a tree thing. Like, yeah. So if they're a fish and they've been following the elephant all around saying like, oh, I gotta be just like the elephant. I don't even know. Well, you can't be like that elephant because you wasn't designed to be like that. But if you start looking at other fish, then you probably would be okay. So I think that sometimes that goes on because there's pressure by, and maybe the parent believes you ought to be an elephant. Like, that's what you should be. And then they're like, oh, that's what I should be. Like, and they spend all their time being depressed and upset about that because that's not that. I like to use the analogy of the body. Like, if we're, as a human race, all parts of a body, right? So one person is the hand, one person's the eyes, one person's the leg, one person's the feet. If you, as the eye, spend most of your time being jealous of the hands because they can manipulate things, because they can drive, because they can be doing this, that, and the other, then you're going to leave the body blind because you're supposed to be giving us vision. That's what you're supposed to do for yourself, which you would feel happy doing that. And that's what you're supposed to do for the rest of the body. So I think that happens sometimes. I think the other thing is sometimes it's just fear because they grew up or they heard things, or either it's coming from the outside and inside or just the inside, where what they heard is you're not okay. You're not okay and you're not going to be okay. You're not going to be good at this. And that fear of putting themselves out there is that they're going to discover that they're not okay. And then my answer to that would be a basic answer to that is, okay, if you think you're not okay now, and you try and you're still not okay, and you've lost nothing.
You can only win out of the situation.
Yeah.
Real quick, and then we'll continue. This made me think of whenever I ask my students, I always ask my students, why are you here? And I'll ask them, you know, I'll always ask them, what do you want to do with your life? We'll have that kind of conversation. And a lot of them always say, you know, if I could just get a degree and get a job and I can pay my bills, I'm happy. And I'd be like, why? And like, you know, that's why I hear a lot of times in therapy, people always say, ask client, like I always hear people say, I'm trying to help my clients get to where they want to be. You know, they'll say, what are their goals? And for me, as I am developing as a therapist, I've decided that I don't want to ask people that, because what if their perceptions of who they are and what they can do are limited? I want you to come in my office and I'm going to say, we're going to work together and we're going to help you become the best version of whoever you can be. As opposed to saying, what do you want to do? Because what if what do you want to do is like some of my students say, I just want to get a job and pay my bills, when there's so much more out there for you. And I always tell my students, there's a whole lot of money out there. Go out and make it. And don't feel bad about chasing wealth. And like, there's so many things that you can do, but my past circumstances have sort of dictated, when you've suffered so much in your life, anything is a step above that seems so much better. You know, I tell people all the time in relationships, they was in an abusive relationship and in a relationship that they're not getting hit now, and they think they're in a good relationship. No, I said, just because you're getting something more than you had before, it doesn't mean that what you're getting is good. If your past relationship was a 1 and now you're at a 3, it feels so much better, but you're a 3 and a 10 is the maximum. You just think that what you're getting is good because it's more than what you had before, but it doesn't mean that it's the most or the best that you could have in life. Right. So I just think it just when you saying that made me think about that, how sometimes how just I'm just sort of piggybacking again, like giving you kudos and sort of piggybacking off that idea. Like sometimes people's ideas of themselves are so limited. You know, they don't know, they have no idea of the greatness that's in them and what they can do. I always tell my kids, you know, the God and the universe don't give you dreams that it don't intend for you to chase.
Right.
If it wasn't intended for you to chase it, you wouldn't even have the thought in the first place. So don't be afraid. Go ahead.
Right. Even with this as a therapist, like thinking about that, I struggle with some of this. You know, I do the question like, what is your goal? But I think I do it a little bit with a different twist than most, how most do it. I think in general, when I'm asking the question, what is your goal? I am asking what they want, but I think your point about them not knowing about what they want is clear, it happens often, and having them try to figure it out. I think the other thing is, if you can just help somebody figure out what their strengths are, what they value, and how that's affecting their overall mental health. Like if I value this one thing, I value cherishing people and treating people with kindness, but I got a job that sets me up to not treat people kindly or to do something that goes against my value, then that might be why you feel whatever the emotion is. So there's a lot of value in just helping people like clarify like this, and don't have to be like contradictory, like big problem values. It might just be that you value working with people, and your job is a job where you don't work with people at all. Like it doesn't require you to. And that's why you're so horrible at, not horrible, but like why you feel horrible at your job.
Yeah.
Cause you don't get to do this, but you don't know that. Maybe you do know it, but you haven't recognized it. And you also have shrunk down to say like, but there's no jobs where I can work with people. There's no job like that. I have to just take this other job because that's all that exists.
Yeah.
I also acknowledge though that this is what becomes hard, you know, when we learn about these things and think about the way that the prior psychologists or mental health professionals that came before us, most of them look one way, most of them happen to be white and male, and the perspective doesn't always take into account all of these different environmental factors that get into play. But even when the environmental factors come into play, I try to help people think about, okay, if there are environmental factors, which there always will be, how much time are you spending focusing on those environmental factors you can't change as opposed to the ones you can change? That's a real question that should be considered no matter what.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So this last decade, what has changed from now until your 30s?
Okay, so
late 20s to now.
Were we in 20 to 30? Is that where we're at? Okay, we're on 30 to 40 then, right?
Yeah.
All right, so 30 to 40, if I was writing a book about my life, probably I would call it What's Up, Doc? You know, because, I mean, that's when the 7 of those years was in the doctorate program, which created its own struggle because I was went through my doctorate program while I was working in. But I would say through the struggle of just that and then major relationship that I had that just didn't go the way I would like it to go, what I learned is that you're going to fall down and you got to get back up. I had some health scares during that time, like a cancer scare. You know, I developed some severe back problems during that time. Other things, you know, like that, not just that you got to get back up, but it's about your team. I think early on in my 30s, I was all about the mindset that, like, if you ain't going to help me, that's cool. I'm going to do it myself. I don't care what I got to do. I'll just put it on my back and get it done. As I got older, I'm like, nah, what I need is a dynamic team, you know, like, but that takes risk. Like, you got to put yourself out there. You got to, rather that team is, you know, your first team, like the person you couple with, and or your friends and people, not just your friends, like friends you do stuff with, like you build businesses with. Friends are an important part of it, but I'm talking about people you're building your dynasty with. And just realizing that even collaborating on something like this, the radio show, that you need good people that you can collaborate with. Anything that's been great, that's been created, wasn't created by one person. You know, you could be strong by yourself, but you're not going to be a dynasty by yourself.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like I'm all about a dynasty. I'm not, but I'm just, you know, to really build, you gotta you build with people. You don't build by yourself.
That's actually, not to cut you off, that's something that I actually learned from you. When getting to know you, that's what I learned from you, is that social friendships and networks and associations are just so important. Because I'm an isolationist, and I'm the exact way. I do things on my own, and I just get them done. And that's something that you taught me, was just, it's important to have these connections and these friendships. Not, you know, maybe something is produced from them, and maybe they aren't, but just social networks and connections with people and being connected to other people is important. So I'm sorry, but go ahead. So again, that's something that you took from your 20s to your 30s, was this notion or idea, or that's something, that's an evolution of you, this idea of that connections and social networks are important.
Yeah, from my 30s to 40s. I mean, it's too bad that it took so long to get there. Because I think earlier on, if I could have, when I was like super gung-ho with my energy, I still got energy, y'all. But I'm just saying, like, now I'm involved in a lot of different things. I think if I had that little nugget early on, and I found the right people, because it's a game and it's a risk. Like, you, not everybody you collaborate with is gonna produce anything. Not that they all have to produce, but sometimes it might be something that doesn't go good at all. Yeah. But that's a risk you gotta take. You know what I'm saying? You gotta take that risk and be able to bounce back when that happens. That's just, you know, part of it. But I think it's interesting because I'm a big proponent of group assignments in my classes. Or at least I was until now I'm in these bigger classes and it's hard to do. But I don't do it to torture students. I do it because I think the collaboration is important. I think learning, like, even when you see, you know, sometimes you see it incorporated into reality TV shows. Like, I was watching The Rap Game, Jermaine Dupri, season 2. It's pretty good. I like those kind of stories where you see someone come out on top of you. But he had this little collaboration scene, and I've seen it like that in other reality shows. And even though it's like a made-for-TV thing, that collaboration thing is real. Like, and I'm trying to give my students the opportunity to learn that. I know they don't like it because some of them just really prefer to work on their own. But that's not how it works. If you really want to be, you know, you want to thrive at something in life, you're going to need to be on a team. You know, the president has a cabinet for a reason. You know, if you think about all major leadership components, they have a board, they have, you know, there's a reason that exists.
Yeah. So you got through graduate school and you are here. So we got 10 minutes. So if we look back, the biggest or the largest difference between young Nate, young Dr. Chapman, young Nate, and now Dr. Chapman is what? How is your perspective on the world, your perspective on spirituality, your perspective on identity, what is the largest, if you could sum that up, is it optimism? Is it, you know, a more connectedness with the world? Is it, I am more in tune with who I am? What's the largest between then and now? What is the largest thing?
Well, I would say I'm gonna go to spirituality last. I think I'll just start with, in general, I'm thinking the theme that pops out to mind for me is lost and found. And it's not necessarily that I felt like I was lost when I was a kid, but I just had ambition and thoughts that went everywhere. They weren't real focused. And they become more focused as I went through these different periods in life, you know? And I think that's the biggest revolution, is the power of being single-mindedly focused on a thing. Because even if, and I think that focus should be what your purpose is, once you figure that out, people see me and say, I do a lot of things. Okay, well, this guy teaches. Okay, he has some clients in terms of therapy clients. Oh, he does some coaching, he does some workshops. They all look like different things, but they all stem from the same seed, helping people enhance and grow their life through, by me, using my knowledge of psychology, whether I'm using it to teach, whether I'm using it with therapy, whether I'm using it with coaching. that is all stems. Those are all like, what do you call it? Those are all branches from the same tree.
Yeah.
If you're looking outside and you don't know that, they look different. And I think that's when it becomes a problem, when a person does have all these different things that are different trees, because you can't manage them. But that's the one thing I learned. I think the other thing is, as I get older, well, you also have to understand, when I was a kid, what I wanted to be was an adult. And so now I'm an adult. And I think I've become more free as an adult. As I get older, I've become more free. Free from a lot of things. And that's evolved over time.
I mean, literally or metaphorically?
I think literally and metaphorically. I mean, I think free from some of the pressures that I may have felt when I was younger. All these things come with their consequences, because when you feel the freedom to take responsibility for what you do, that means you just got to take responsibility for the backlash of any of these consequences. You know, deciding, oh, you know, I'm doing this, but now I want to do this other thing. People ain't gonna like it. People feel a certain way about it. You have to figure out if that's best for you, if that's gonna work in the long run, and then be willing to eat whatever the consequences are. Then I think in terms of spirituality, man, like, you know, that's still a work in progress for me. But I believe, you know, that the essence of God is love. And the biggest thing that I can do, and that's what I think was harder for me in my 20s, because I was like letter of the law type of person, that I can show love to people. And that's how I can do it. I can't, you know, I'm not going to be God, I'm not Jesus, but what I can do is live love and hope that creates something for people. I don't know if that's going to get me into heaven or not, but I do know that it can plant some seeds on this earth.
That's dope. That's pretty nice. So as we, and we up on time, but as we wrap this up, just reiterate this idea of purpose. For those out there listening that say, I heard all of this, what do I need to do? And you talked about this idea of, I do all of these things, but they stem from something. So for the person out there listening saying, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, I don't know where I'm going, I don't know how to make anything happen, what advice would you give them that is connected to that idea of, you talked about this seed, things growing from this seed?
I would take some time individually to quiet the noise. And I'm talking about the noise just like LeBron would talk about the noise during the playoffs. The noise is everybody else, you know, the people, your parents, society, the TV shows that you're watching that tell you this is where you should be, your professors, what they're saying you should do, all that stuff. Quiet the noise, take some space, ask yourself a simple question every day. Who am I? What do I want out of life? Your own version of those questions. That's Oprah's questions, I like those. So you ask yourself those questions, take some time, a period, each day, and sit quietly and meditate on that until you get some answers, one. I think two, the other thing is, if you have, you know, you believe in a higher power, then pray on that. You know, pray on that specific question, you know. Three, try to establish what your strengths are. If you have a hard time answering that question, which I have many clients that do, like I ask them what your strengths are, they don't know what the answer is. There are many little strength assessments you can take. Martin Seligman has one. You can go to his website, Authentic Happiness. Now, these are his versions of it, so you might not totally agree with those strengths. The whole idea is, whichever one you take, Martin Seligman's one, or you go to Strength Finder, or you take some True Colors, or whichever thing that you take, you ask yourself, within the range of options, do those things resonate with me? If they do resonate with me, once you find out what they are, ask yourself, how can I use that in my daily life? You can't switch your job up right now, switch up your volunteer work. Like, well, if you do volunteer work, what? How can I incorporate this into my volunteer work? How can I incorporate this into my relationship? How can I incorporate this into things I do? That, at least according to positive psychology, is going to enhance your mood. Because when you are in a state of flow and congruence, that's gonna change things for you. A lot of people have strengths and think that some people have been find a way to incorporate their strengths in what they do. Others say like strengths are, there's no way I can do my strengths in my job. Well, if you want to spend 70% of your time at your job, you're gonna have a problem in life. So I think that would be a couple things you could do. The other thing is hire somebody to help you with that, right? If you can afford it, right? Or even sometimes you got people, like if you want to go to a coach, sometimes you have coaches out there that are just starting. I don't mean they're going to be any good. Well, they just start and they want to help. They might do it for free. Maybe you just need somebody to help you think through these things that's not really going to be given and instigating a lot into it. So you could do that with a coach. You could do that with a therapist. Or you could just speak to mentors if you have them. You want to make sure that you got the type of mentor that has a good ear and not just a good mouth. What I mean by that is you might need, if you're trying to quiet the noise, meaning you're trying to talk to somebody who can help pull something out of you that's already in you, you need someone who's not going to be trying to plant something in you that's not there.
Good deal, good deal. And on that note, we are up on time, people. We want to thank all of those who continue to support the show, continue to listen. For those who have questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H, b2bpsych@gmail.com. You can also contact Dr. Chapman on his website. He has a Facebook page as well as his website. He'll give you the information.
Yeah, the website is ChapmanTrainingAndConsulting.com. I know it's long. ChapmanTrainingAndConsulting.com.
Yeah. So again, we thank you. We always we like to thank Marsh University as well as WMUL for giving this platform just to talk about mental health, to talk about identity, to talk about evolution of the evolution of identity and who we are, to talk about community mental health, community issues. We really do want to say thank you for the platform to and the latitude that they give us to talk about some of these issues and concerns and ideas. So again, we say thank you. As I always wrap it up and say, I thank all of you for listening. As I always say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. You know, when you die, make sure that you die empty. Everything that you want to do, try to do it. Everybody that you love, make sure they know and make sure that you are doing something in this life that gives you fulfillment and sets your soul on fire. And I wish you all peace and blessings. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
All right. So a couple of things I want to say before I get into that, some logistical announcements. If you do happen to check out the website, which is ChapmanTrainingAndConsulting.com, there are also a couple of blogs on there that you might find useful. Not that many, but it's like 5 on there. Check them out. You can subscribe to them. Maybe I'll be coming up with another one in the next month or so. So as we go out, man, I feel a need to just speak to maybe a few people. So I feel like there's probably a few people out there that's feeling, I don't know, you feel like you're waving in the wind. You feel like you don't know what you're supposed to do. You don't feel like you've met, you know, you found out what your calling is. And I just want to remind you that something has been planted in all of us, that there's a seed and might be at different stages of development and all of us, but it exists. And that seed has been planted in you and I for reasons outside of ourselves. So you taking the time to figure that out is not only going to increase your mental health and your well-being, you don't know what else it's going to plant. You know, I like watching shows like that one I was talking about, the rap game, because what you see is somebody using their version of the gift, whether you approve of that gift or not. They're using that, their own talent, they're embracing that to inspire people in their ways. But guess what? You ain't gotta be a rapper, you ain't gotta be a hooper. There's lots of different things that you can do, that you were created to do. Gifts can be big and they can seem small, but those small gifts can still have a big impact. So I just wanna encourage you to remember that that seed is there. Maybe it just needs to be watered. Maybe you've been living in a place where it hasn't been that fertile. That doesn't mean the seed doesn't exist. That doesn't mean that seed won't grow. And for others, I think it's full grown. It's just that you have been too afraid to put it out there so people can see it. Put it out there, see what happens. The worst that can happen is, you know, that some people tell you they don't like it. There's enough people in this world that some people are gonna benefit from it. All right, peace and blessings.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I
played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard.